Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the Future Farming podcast. I'm Tim Morden, Head of Innovation, Productivity and Science Team here in DEFRA. And in this one, we're going to be talking to Rui Andres. He'll introduce himself at the moment, but he's leading a really exciting robotic raspberry picking project, which we're going to hear more about in a moment. And we're going to be having a discussion about that project, how he benefited from government funding, and a broader discussion about robotics and automation. So first of all, Rui, welcome. It's great to have you with us. And I hope that when things free up, we'll be able to see this robot in real life. But after you've introduced yourself, maybe we can just have a quick word about what the project is all about. But do you want to explain your role, Rui, first?
Yes. Thank you very much, Tim. And thank you for the invitation. I'm currently the CEO of Fieldwork Robotics. I've supported the company to be spun off out of Plymouth University. My background is a mix between engineering and venture capital. And basically the skills I brought to the companies to support them on the management side, but also on risk mitigation. And that we bring something that is really complex from a university into the market.
Okay, great. So what we want to do is just have a discussion about your project, hear about what you're doing as a real life current project that's benefited from government funding, and then maybe have a broaden out into a few other topics. But just before I ask you to say a bit more about the project, Rui, why on earth did you choose raspberries? Because from my experience as a amateur gardener, I know that they're difficult little so-and-sos to pick, and they always end up on the floor, and most of it ends up on my clothes. So why did you possibly pick the most difficult fruit?
Well, it's a mix of technology and opportunity. If we look first on the opportunity side, there are a lot of companies trying to develop robots to harvest strawberries and tomatoes. These fruits tend to be a bit firmer. There is no other company, as far as we are aware, that is trying to harvest raspberries. Then if we look into the market, we are talking about a market that is much smaller than strawberries, but that is growing at 22% per annum. And the base is roughly around $2 billion US dollars market size. So we are talking about a very interesting market in terms of growth, but also in terms of opportunity, as we are not facing any direct competitors in the space, exactly because it's very hard to harvest. Then looking back into the technology, Dr. Martin Stolen has developed a robotic arm that is able to operate in very complex environments. And if you look into the way that raspberries are grown, then you have wires sustaining the crop and automated grade arm robots that try to go into this type of crop will start damaging the ropes that hold the crop. And we have basically built an arm that allows us to absorb those impacts. So even if our cameras or sensors fail, we will not damage the assets of the grower. And that is a big differentiation between ourselves and the rest of the robotic companies. Also, the way we have developed the robot allows us very easily and quickly to go from raspberries into strawberries. So our strategy has been addressing a market that, due to the difficulties, nobody else is able to address. And then over time, we want to address the same markets that are being addressed by our competitors.
Okay, great. Thanks. And do you want to just tell us a bit more about where you are with the project, next steps, and commercialization, and those kind of difficult questions that I know you're grappling with?
Yes. So in terms of development, it has been a great path. And without the funding, we wouldn't be able to be where we are today, because the risk of bringing something like this to the market is quite high. Luckily, we have been able to develop the technology in such a way that we have been able to engage with companies such as Bosch UK. We have been approached by large players that are not well known in the UK, but they are well known in continental Europe, in Americas as well, such as Bondwell. And we have been working with British growers that have farms both in the UK and continental Europe. The working with farmers have proven very helpful, because they teach us what they need to have in terms of quality, in terms of sizing, timings, where can we add value for them as well. And the synergy is now translating into something that is working, is ready to go into the field, and we'll start providing commercial service and operations from January 2022.
Okay, great. And those companies that have been approaching you, did you have to phone them up and hassle them, or were they knocking on your door eager to get hold of this technology?
It was a mix of both. So I can't mention all of the companies we are in discussions because they are not in the public domain. But in some cases were companies that were part of the team network. So we already knew them. They have participated with us in other projects from the past. And they trust the way we mitigate risk and how we try to bring things to the market. So they like our approach, our culture, the way we work. Other companies, they basically heard about us. And a little bit on the sense of what you were saying is why raspberries? Because it's one of the hardest. And the fact that we have developed a technology that is able to address one of the hardest crops in the fruit market got the attention of a lot of players. And we started having calls, emails from British growers, from potential partners. But most interestingly, we got calls from Canada, US, New Zealand, Australia, with a lot of growers that want to collaborate with us. And we have kept them on the loop, and we are building an ecosystem. So once we are ready to ramp up the production, we already have the right channels, we have the trust, and we have the clients already lined up.
Okay, that's great. And you mentioned, Rui, that you received government funding, which was important to the project. Do you just want to say a bit more about that, why government funding was so important?
Yes. When I engaged the first time with the project at Plymouth University, we were talking about a technology that would work on a dark environment that was very, very slow, and it was basically just one arm. And without the government funding, we wouldn't be able to basically pick up the technology from where it was at the university and bring it into a commercial stage, because most investors would walk away from the moment we would show the technology as it was. So what happened at the time was one of the founder shareholders put a loan in the company, and we have been able to get the rest of the money from Innovate UK, which allowed us to basically go from one arm that only operates it in a very dark environment to something that is a robot that is able to operate in the fields. And that has been attracting not only the interest from growers, but also large corporates throughout the UK and other parts of the world.
Okay, great. And clearly, automation and robotics, especially in horticulture, is very topical at the moment because we know we have a labour shortage across all areas of agriculture and the economy at the moment. But in horticulture at the moment, we've relied heavily on seasonal workers, mainly from Eastern Europe, for a number of decades. And how will your robot compare to a super picker from Eastern Europe?
Yes. That's a very interesting question. So on the first side, I would just like to emphasize this is not a UK-wise problem. So we are seeing exactly the same problem in North America, in across continental Europe, including, for example, France, Portugal, Spain. We are seeing even in India exactly the same subject appearing over and over on discussions with growers. The second point is just to give you an idea. I was having a discussion a couple of weeks ago with a Portuguese grower that has 80 hectares of fruit, and he could only harvest 10 hectares. So this tells you that the shortage is quite high. It's not just UK. This is a worldwide problem. And it's really good to see British technology going into different markets and being applicable into different things. Now, in terms of how do we compare, we will not compete in cost, because unlike a factory where a robot will take things from A to B. In horticulture, you need to rely on sensors, cameras that have a lot of noise and uncertainty. So you need to work around all of this noise, try to reduce it, and whenever you find a target, you need to be sure that it's something you want to harvest. So our competition is not coming through speed. It will come through availability of resources. So whilst the growers today cannot find these resources, they will have something that is a robot that they know it's going to be available. It will be a difference in the end of the day on harvesting the crop or having a big loss that might close the company in 1 year or two. But also the other interesting thing on discussions with growers is even when they manage to find harvesters, the number of repeaters have been reducing over time. And in the past, these used to be around 80%. Today is lower than 50%, which means there is more time to train the harvesters. There is more waste being produced and a lot of crop being captured or being harvested that will become waste when it could be, in fact, revenue for the grower. And this will have a big impact down the line to the consumer as well. So I think in the end of the day, where we should compare ourselves with humans is on cost of harvesting on pounds per kilo basis and also on the quality. So we can assure to the grower that not only he will harvest his crop, as the crop that is going to be harvested will have the right quality to be sold in the supermarkets. And we are reducing their wastage and improving their upside.
Okay, that's really interesting. Thank you. And you mentioned other countries having similar sorts of challenges as we do here in the UK. And you know, there's a perception from some growers I speak to that countries around the world are way ahead of us and we're lagging behind and they've all got robots all over the place and all we've got to do is actually go over there and buy them and bring them back here and the labour problem is partly solved. I guess that's probably not quite right.
Well, I don't know exactly which technologies the grower are talking. One of the things we have seen is for example, some misleading on what is available on the market. So if you look into harvesting of raspberries, you have some automated harvesters. Now, the question is, these automated harvesters will damage the fruit. So you can't sell it to supermarkets. You can sell it for jams, for frozen fruits, and all of that. But if you compare the price on the farm gate price of these fruits compared with fruits that are sold to the supermarket, then many times you are talking about a multiple of difference. So where we are focusing ourselves is not on the mass market where it doesn't matter the shape of the fruit. Where we are focusing is on the prime fruit that is sold on the shelves of the supermarket fresh that will attract a better price for the grower and for the supermarket as well.
Okay, thank you. And what were the key obstacles and barriers you faced as you developed this technology?
Well, one of the first ones was the company has been set up in Plymouth. And whilst Plymouth is a very attractive place and very beautiful, it was really hard to attract people to work in Plymouth. So luckily I was in Cambridge. Cambridge is a really nice hub for technology development. So we brought the company from Plymouth into Cambridge and we start recruiting staff. One of the biggest challenges has been around the availability of robotics and machine learning engineers, because on that market we are competing with the likes of Amazon and our other large corporates, where we don't have the capacity to pay exactly the same salaries. So we need to compete on things like culture, environment, purpose as well. And luckily, we have been able to attract really good people. I would say the second one is funding, always. And the funding comes in two parts. One is funding for innovation, which luckily we have been able to have access to some funding that has been allowing us to develop a lot of new technology that is innovative. On the other side is on the private funding, where the perception of the funders doesn't seem to be aligned with the needs of the grower. So many times we are looking into funders that are seeking a beautiful product. And on the other side, we have the growers that are telling us, I don't need nothing beautiful, I need something that works. And I need something that works on cost and that is able to harvest with quality. So one of the biggest challenges when we show our robot to a potential funder, and when we know that there are other competitors speaking, many times there is a willingness to fund the beautiful rather than what it works within cost and quality. So that has been one of the challenges we have seen. I think it will come with risk. I've seen that in other markets when I was on the investment side. People tend to look into the look-like rather than the work-like. But what I like to do is to compare ourselves with the likes of John Deere, where when John Deere entered into the tractor business, they had the Water Boys. And the Water Boys was a very ugly tractor, but it worked. And today, with time and money, they have very beautiful products. So what I want to have is something that is in the field, working, satisfying the needs of the growers. And then over time, we will look into how to make it pretty. But we are not looking into investors that are looking just for the pretty. We want investors that are looking into what's functional, what can deliver what the grower wants, and not speeds and pretty.
Okay, well, that's an interesting aspect that we hadn't appreciated, Rui. I was talking about finance there. I was just going to mention about a couple of government initiatives that we've got on the go at the moment, and I was just going to ask a couple of follow-up questions. I mean, the first is something called the Farming Innovation Pathways, where this sits alongside UKRI's program, but it's very much in partnership with DEFRA, my department, and the aim of this is finding a way to encourage farm-focused research and development that helps productivity, environmental sustainability, and just a sort of general resilience. And we had a fantastic response to this competition, as we do with most of these competitions, with hundreds of really good applications submitted right across agriculture and horticulture areas. And we could only select 50, but I was just going to mention a few of these projects that we chose. One was a project coupling automation and artificial intelligence to develop a test and fruit scouting robot in horticulture systems. There was another one, which was a project to harvest green ammonia from pig waste to produce new clean hydrogen-based fuels. And then there was another one that caught my eye, which was a project that aims to improve the quality and supply of native trees and hedgerow seeds so that it could reduce the need to import young trees. And this helps with the government's ambitious tree planting schemes. So, you know, we've got some really good projects going on as part of that funding round. And then more recently, we've launched something called the Farming Innovation Program. This is a new farmer-led funding program for research and development. And the emphasis here is really on trying to get more sort of bottom-up from the farmers and growers' ideas about what they really need to boost innovation, to improve productivity, help the environment, increase prosperity, and so on, right across agriculture and horticulture. So this program is also very much interested in supporting knowledge exchange, because I expect you're aware, Rui, that one of the things that we don't do so well in this country, perhaps that some other countries do well, is that knowledge exchange. So we put quite a lot of money into research and development and innovation and things like that, but we're not always good at getting it into the marketplace, into the fields. So we're really having a sort of emphasis on that, really. And again, that competition opened on the 20th of October. We've had a great response, and we're processing those applications at the moment. So obviously I can't say more about those projects at the moment, but there's more down the track as well. We've got a whole rhythm of competitions coming out under this banner of the Farming Innovation Program. So I'm sure you'll be watching avidly for those to see if you can apply for more help in your projects. But you're benefiting from that government money. What would your advice be to any business, farmer or grower who's thinking about getting into innovation and is looking around for help and support?
Yes. Well, thank you for mentioning the FIP. We have put some applications, so
I thought you would.
With fingers crossed, looking forward to know if we're able to finance some of the initiatives we are trying to expand into. But I would say from the farmer's point of view, and from discussions we had with farmers, everybody tries to get their own edge and be ahead of the game. But there is one point where working together might benefit the entire industry rather than trying to work separately. Luckily, we have been able to collaborate with growers that are very open, and they have had great discussions with myself, my team, and they have been very open, and that allows us to develop things quicker and to align our developments to their needs. So I would say open innovation would be something really good to see more growers open to do. Also, if you are interested and want to have discussions with us, with Fieldwork and other companies, plus please get in touch and have a discussion with us. We like to have open forums where we basically have open discussions, and we try to understand not only today's problems, but also problems of the future. Because as a company, we will serve the current needs, but also future needs. We will keep aiming, developing things for the growers. If you are a company trying to enter into the space, what I would say is, well, guarantee you have the right partners with you to try to help you. If you do something that is not aligned with the need, then the question is, why spending time and money doing something that might not go to the market? But if you find the right partners, then just try to do it as quick as we can in a low budget until you have customers. And once you have customers, then run as fast as you can and commercialize the technology.
Okay, thank you. And it's a really exciting project. Farming and growing can have the wrong perception as a rather difficult, dirty, and unexciting career choice. But in fact, it's absolutely the opposite. And the stuff that you're doing is tremendously exciting. And there's thousands of similar projects and initiatives going on up and down the country. So to what extent do you think, the kind of work that you're doing will make farming and horticulture a more attractive proposition for school leavers?
Yes. I always like to, well, there is a quote from Bill Gates on what's the impact of computers on humanity. And he replies saying that computers will release people to do more interesting jobs. So I see robotics exactly in the same sense. I think there will be a lot of what is called today low-skilled jobs being converted into higher-skilled jobs. And basically people that will be today are working in planting canes, in doing different jobs on the agriculture, that at some point will start operating robots, doing maintenance of these robots, taking the robots from one side to the other. I think there is a whole range of new jobs that will be created by these opportunities. And one of the interesting things is, once again, looking into the tractors. Before tractors, you had loads of people working in the field. Today, people are not, well, the unemployment rate hasn't exploded, and you have people that are specialized in operating tractors. So basically what you do is you change the skills of people, and you create availability for higher skilled jobs.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. And finally, Rui, what do you think horticulture is going to look like in, say, 10 years' time? Apart from all covered with your robots in polytunnels everywhere.
Yeah. Well, 10 years, I don't know, is a short range. One of the long-term views I have, and that I make inside the company, is a parallel with the automotive manufacturing, where if you look into 1910 to 1930, basically you have assembly lines completely manual. And over time, you start seeing robots overtaking some of these tasks and making these manufacturing plants much more efficient and able to reduce the costs of the car, so everybody can have a car. My view for the horticulture industry is similar, in the sense that if you look today, most of the work in greenhouses and polytunnels is manual. There isn't a lot of automation around. But over time, what I would like to see is robots starting overtaking. Well, not overtaking, because at the moment there is a lack of harvesters, and the UK alone is lacks 90,000 harvesters. So you'll start seeing these gaps being filled by robots. And then over time, you'll see some of these harvesters being converted into operators of robots and operating in the value chain of the robotic space in horticulture. And ideally, and one of the things I would like to see is the wastage of greenhouses and polytunnels coming down, and the price of food being sustainable, so everybody can afford to buy soft fruits and all different kind of fruits.
Okay. Rui Andres, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you ever so much for sparing the time to be with us today. And we do wish you all the very best of success in this exciting venture.
Thank you very much, Tim. It has been a pleasure.
So that was Rui Andres. And if you want more information about anything you've heard today, or indeed other aspects of how farming is changing, then I suggest you look on the Future Farming blog. Thank you.